Hello and welcome to today's Hometown Tourist with myself and Harrod Smith. Over the past 3 weeks, Exposure Radio has been exploring local attractions that should be just as interesting for those of us who live in the area as for those who are just visiting. I would say that it's important to know the history of where you live, as it is to know your national histories. Today is no different, as I'm here in Cardiff to find out about two museums that aim to recount how Wales and its capital city have developed over time. I'm here in Cattaes Park, the location of the first museum I'm going to have a look at, the National Museum of Wales, Cardiff. The museum inhabits part of the Civic Centre buildings, which were originally built in 1904 to house the Town Hall. The National Museum of Wales officially came into existence in 1907 when it received a collection from the Cardiff Museum. Building the museum was delayed due to the outbreak of the First World War, but in 1927 work was completed and the official home of the National Museum of Wales was opened. I'm going to speak to the communications officer of the museum to find out more about what happens inside the attraction. Okay, so I'm sat in the National Museum at the moment with Catherine Mears, who's going to talk to us a little bit about it.
Hello, Chrysa, how are you?
Just to start with, could you tell us a little bit about the history of the museum?
This is National Museum Cardiff, which is one of the seven national museums across Wales. But this is also where the National Museum started. It was first established, there was a national library already in Aberystwyth, and it was decided that with the collections that we had in Wales, that a national museum needed to be established, and not in the same place as the library, so Cardiff as the capital city was chosen for that.
So why do you think it's important for Wales to have its own national museums?
Wales, being its own independent country, needs a national museum, especially with the collections that we own as a nation. I mean, the history of Wales is something that should be told and needs to be told.
Parts of the museum are aimed at children, which is brilliant. So why do you think it is important to kind of attract the young and to do exhibits that are aimed at them?
Just to use some corporate speak, the museum's aim, our aim, is to become a national institution of learning. That's one of our priorities as a museum, is to educate people about their history, and that's why the education side and the children who come here so important. It's a chance for them to enjoy the exhibits, but to learn at the same time. Sometimes they don't even realise they are learning about something. And because we're free entry as well, I think that's why we attract several families, or several hundred families, each week.
Yeah, I was here last Saturday, and there were lots and lots of children running around, especially in the National History of Wales. So could you tell me a bit about the future, what's coming up in sort of the next year?
Yeah, of course. Well, you touched on science and the dinosaurs, which, as you say, is really, really popular with people, and, you know, you can't get away from that. We're developing the bottom floor of this museum, and over the next few years, but the whole of the bottom floor will be dedicated to natural history. And then in July, we're opening some new contemporary art art galleries to complete the National Museum of Art for Wales.
Thank you. And to finish, do you have a favourite part of the museum?
Yeah, I think, to be honest with you, it's the natural history galleries, just because every time you go in there, you see usually children's faces just looking at things like the woolly mammoth. It just brings things to life for them. And I think it's seeing people's reactions in those galleries, which, yeah, one of my favourite things.
For more information on the National Museum of Wales, you should visit www.museumwales.ac.uk. As well as this, Cardiff is about to be home to another museum dedicated to telling its histories. The Cardiff Story is due to open on April 1st, upstairs in the Old Library. This will be an interactive experience for all visitors, as it aims to tell the history of Cardiff as a city through the people that have lived here. I spoke to Lucy Connors and Jim Groves from The Cardiff Story to find out more about this upcoming project.
The Cardiff Story is all about telling the history of Cardiff, how it's become the amazing city it is today. And one of the main things which we wanted to do was to tell the history of Cardiff through people's own personal stories and histories, to make the people of Cardiff at the centre of the museum.
Well, we've got a lot of interactive exhibits, particularly, for example, the docks model, which is a model of the docks, I think, in 1913 or 1912, when the Cardiff docks were at their height, and the Cardiff docks obviously being the reason Cardiff ballooned in size in the early part of the 20th century, as well as Things like there's a display called the is it View from the Valley?
Yeah.
Which is as what well, it's to demonstrate the relationship Cardiff shares with the valleys, which is obviously quite intricate because without the valleys being there and the coal coming down from the valleys, Cardiff wouldn't have existed. So that was a project that we set up to investigate the relationship Cardiff has with the valleys now that the coal industry has moved away. So that's a series of digital stories that people can watch and investigate that in that relationship between the two.
I'm going to be involved in a sort of space in the gallery called Community Showcase, and it's basically open for any community group to exhibit. First, it's going to be a sort of three-month rolling sort of temporary exhibition space. So if there's any groups and they feel like they want a space or they want to exhibit, we'd be really, really interested in hearing what groups have to say.
That's, I mean, the real driving force behind the museum is to give the people of Cardiff, the communities of Cardiff, that kind of that hub, that real place to engage with their history. Because, I mean, the population of Cardiff, it's not so much transient, it's growing a lot at the moment. There's a huge student population, there's a big commuter population. And for them, as well as the people who've lived here all their life, it's really important for them to have that kind of sense of identity with the city, and we hope we can provide that.
That was Lucy Connors and Jim Graves talking to me about the Cardiff story, after which I was lucky enough to have a look around some of the yet-to-be-completed exhibitions. There have been a conservative effort to make this museum something that the people of Cardiff can make their own, giving anyone with a story to tell the opportunity to do so. If you'd like to find out anything more about the Cardiff story, then visit www.cardiffstory.com. All of the attractions we have been to in this series rely on funding in some way. However, suddenly there appears to be a lot less money around, and organisations are beginning to rely more on private funding or donations. But as culture is not an essential part of existing, should the state be relied upon to support cultural organisations? I spoke to some young people outside the National Museum to discover what they thought.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's always important for people to be aware of their history and just have a sense of awareness about where they've come from as a people and things like that. So, you know, not just from a Welsh perspective to see where the Welsh people have come from and how they've developed, but also the peoples of other cultures as well. And I think it's important to see that. For example, those Buddhist carvings have come all the way from China, and it's not something you normally get to see, particularly, you know, in Britain anyway. So
plus, obviously, it's somewhere free for youngsters and a lot of, you know, the older generation to go. Obviously, it's very expensive now to go places when people are off on holidays.
Unfortunately, we've got loads of people that need feeding, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? So all that money needs to go through the system for the benefits.
I don't know, I think a lot of the time it relies mainly on voluntary sort of contributions. So obviously the people who go to the museums will, you know, contribute to funding and stuff. So I think it would rely mostly on the museum to provide, you know, interesting things that people do want to contribute to. So it's down to them regardless of whether they receive funding or not.
A few opinions there from some young people voicing their views on how attractions like the two museums I have looked at today should generate their funding. I also spoke to Katrin Mears and Lucy Connors to find out their thoughts on the subject.
I think in the last sort of 5 to 10 years, a huge amount has been invested in making it possible for like communities and people to become more involved and interested in arts, whether that's just doing oral history projects, whether that's having reminiscence groups. And for example, I had a meeting with African Caribbean Elder Sisters Group, and they've done partnerships with various community organisations, which of their funding's been cut, so they're not going to be able to do. So I think really it's at grassroots level where people are really going to be affected, because for many it's an outlook for people, you know, it's something for them to do and be interested in, to build confidence. And I think just the lack of funding is just going to mean a lot of those organisations are going to be cut. Basically, in the last sort of 5 years, a lot of work which museums and cultural organisations have had to do has been temporary. It's been contractual. If you want to work in the sector, you've got to look at a sort of temporary contract. So I think the arts has always had that side of it because of it's not a profit-making organisation. But I think so much work has been done, and I think the danger is that all the good work's been done is just going to be forgotten because there's no people maintaining it. I think it is just going to have a huge, huge effect on how people interact with the arts and museums.
I think if you come to this museum or any of our museums any day of the week, you will see why it's so important to continue the National Museums and continue free entry. Because if you see, it's helped us develop the kind of audiences that come here as well. So it's not the stereotypical audiences that people think. And I think in this hard time, you know, it's still really financially difficult. It's important to have things on your doorstep that you can do for free. And thanks to the Assembly that we're able to do that. In terms of these new projects, again, you know, we can't stand still. We've got to develop things, otherwise people won't come.
Both the National Museum of Wales and the Cardiff Story have their funding secured for the next few years. But also, due to their prominent status, they receive a high level of funding from private sources. But not all areas of culture and the arts have the same level of financial security. Both the English and the Welsh Arts Councils have faced tough times as their funding have been cut, and this rolls out to a lack of funding for communities, which can cause problems or even closure to some smaller groups. One example of this is the Hijinks Theatre Company, which is based in Cardiff Bay, and specialises by working with people who have learning disabilities. At the end of last year, they were one of the Welsh organisations to lose a large percentage of their funding, due to a shake-up of how the Arts Council distribute their money. This affected 31 other organisations across Wales, including the Hay Music and Arts Festival, the Pavilion Theatre Royal, and the Llangollen International Music Eisteddfod. I spoke to Mervyn Cousins, the chief executive from the Eisteddfod, to find out how they have had to adapt since the funding cut.
The Eisteddfod has been revenue funded for a number of years, but the Arts Council then took the decision to take festival out of there, which obviously was alarming and caused quite a lot of headlines. However, to be fair to them, in the future, festivals would have their own funding pot. So in the short term, we're in a similar position, but obviously have been worrying, and planning for the future has been an issue. The new festival fund will allow festivals to apply for funding. So with our particular dates of our festival and where our financial years are, we can't apply for that until October. But obviously there are no guarantees, and therefore with our next pot of funding we will not know until we've applied in October. It's worrying, but to be fair to them, they have been very helpful in the short term, and I trust that the Llangollen label, as it were, is the sort of thing that they are able to and want to promote in the future with the criteria that they're building up. So in terms of the present, we have to have a mind on the high level artist, the international flavour of what we do, the promotion of Welsh artists within that, and also an element of commercial thinking in bringing new audiences and so forth. We hope that we can be very eclectic, and in the future, you know, we will certainly be going all the way out to have the highest calibre artist of whatever style, and obviously if we can get that Arts Council funding with a planning period in advance, like the 3-year deal, that will help us enormously.
When I contacted the Arts Council of Wales, I received this statement from them.
Since 1999, the National Assembly for Wales took on the role of giving Arts Council of Wales a block grant, which we can then distribute to the arts as we see fit. A year ago, we announced our intention to conduct what we've called our investment review, the most radical examination of funding we've ever undertaken. Our goal was very simple: to reach the end of the process with a portfolio of organisations that are artistically vibrant, financially durable, and with a level of funding that will enable them to thrive. The arts make an enormous difference to the lives of everyone, but especially young people. So we need to do whatever we can to broaden our approach, making sure that more children and young people in Wales, wherever they live, whatever their circumstances, can participate in and enjoy a wider range of arts activity. Through a rigorous reappraisal of our priorities, we've been able to address structural weaknesses in our arts portfolio. The visual arts and crafts will receive a level of investment that allows them to realise the full potential of our earlier capital investment in this sector. You'll also find more money for dance and a strategy to bring new authority and visibility to literature in Wales.
The financial climate has led to cuts in all areas, with arts and culture being no different. While some of the bigger organisations are managing to stay afloat, others are beginning to struggle. At the start of this month, The Guardian reported the Earl of Clancarty stating in the House of Lords that the arts is for everyone's sake. As well as this, a Welsh Assembly report was released that proposed a new law to bring arts and culture to all areas of Wales. So it seems that there is going to be a Conservative effort to re-establish secure funding for this sector. It is most likely, however, that this will take several years to come into effect, and due to today's current climate, it is uncertain how many current organisations will still be around to benefit from this. You've been listening to the last in the series of Exposure Radio's Hometown Tourists with me, Angharad Smith.